Shure Vasude Vaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we continue with the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. Munayo Sarukristoham Babadvi Lokamangalam Yatkrita Krishna Samprasno Yenatma Supersedati Munaya. O sages, Sadhu, this is relevant. Prishta, questioned. Aham, myself. Babadbi, by all of you. Loka, the world. Mangalam, welfare. Yat, because. Krita, made. Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Samprashna, relevant questions. Yena, by which? Atma, self. Supersedati, completely satisfied, completely pleased. Translation. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Responsively, please. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy. Because they relate to Lord Krishna. And so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort. Are capable of completely satisfying the self. So we continue with this interesting chapter here. And it's interesting to note in the transliteration, Srila Prabhupada has translated several words in interesting manner. For instance, sadhu. Sadhu generally relates to, elevated transcendental personalities. Sadhu also can mean, like a weapon, something that cuts. Different way. Sanskrit's interesting because different words can be translated in different ways. But in this case, he's saying, this is relevant. So he's saying, Munyo Sadhu Prishta. Prishta, your questions. Prishta, Prashna, similar sort of word. Your questions are relevant. He starts straight away. He's saying, "Oh, Sadhu, your questions are relevant. Oh, Muni, your questions are relevant," because he's being questioned by the sages at Namisharanya. And then he says, "Loka Mangalam," that these questions are actually beneficial for the entire world. Loka, the world. Mangalam, auspicious, like we do Mangala Arti during the Brahma Muhurt, is an auspicious time. Mangala Arti is auspicious Arti. There's Arti and there's Mangala Arti. Actually, Sanatana Goswami, when he's giving the list of 64 items of worship, in two places he says, again, do Mangala Arti, do an auspicious Arti. So it seems that most Artis are considered to be auspicious because they're being offered to Krishna. And everything to do with Krishna is auspicious. There's nothing inauspicious about Krishna. Even describes, I think it's the 16th chapter of the Gita, how he describes how that, if someone is like a demon, so that they don't commit further offences, he pushes them down into the lower regions. And Prabhupada describes, because people might say, well, this is not very nice that he's pushing them down the lower regions. But Prabhupada says, but even this is beneficial. And we see. All the Lord's activities are beneficial, but also all the activities of great devotees are beneficial. Just as we see with Narad Muni. when he came upon Manigriva and Nalakavera, and they were behaving in basically a debauched manner, bathing with women naked in a lake, and he cursed them to become trees. Now, normally you would think, oh, gee, what a horrible thing to happen. But when Narad Muni curses somebody, it's very beneficial. Because why? They get to have a connection with Krishna. Because he's actually so transcendentally situated that everything he does is auspicious. And therefore, devotees like Narad Muni, sometimes he's called Bhagavan Narad because of his connection with Krishna. Because he's so intimately connected with Krishna that everything he does is in relation to Krishna. Therefore, when people have contact with him, they get benefit. It's auspicious, even though he may be cursing them. So even though Krishna may kill a demon, even though he may push them down to the lower species of life, they get benefit from that ultimately because it's done by Krishna. And we see in Kurukshetra that everyone that was killed by Arjuna, because they saw Krishna when they died, because Krishna was in front of them at the moment of death, and they got benefit from that. Huge benefit. And they actually got elevated to heavenly planets, etc. Very, very beneficial. Then also it's mentioning here, again he says, sam prashna. So prashna again means questions, but this sam means complete, or it's like a prefix that's elevating the meaning of something. It's just like the word sampradaya. So you break that down into its component parts. It means like sum, meaning completely, pradaya, giving the best. So a sampradaya is something which completely gives the best that you can possibly get. So you look at the way the words are structured. So here it's saying samprashno. Okay, prashna means question, but samprashna means complete or perfect questions. He's saying these are not ordinary questions. These are perfect questions. Because why? Because they're actually the only question that can actually bring about the welfare, the ultimate welfare of all living entities, which we see that Sutta Goswami is going to elaborate on in the next few verses. Like in the next verse, he starts to answer the different questions of the sages. And as you may know from the previous classes, there were six questions that were asked by the sages at Naimisharanya. Now, looking at it a little bit historically, the sages at Naimisharanya, they're assembled there for the purpose of doing a 1,000-year sacrifice. Right? Because they were seeing that Kali was imminent. Lord Krishna had left the planet. Their realized personalities, they understand who Krishna is. They may not be, necessarily fully God realized, but they are certainly very, very realized. There's no actual description of their degree of elevation, but they're certainly very realized personalities. They understand who Krishna is. They understand the nature of Krishna, and they knew that when Krishna was blessing the planet with his footprints, that the earth was in a very auspicious condition, as were all the living entities on the planet. But now that Krishna had returned to their abode, and this is mentioned, right in the beginning. I can't remember. In this age of Kali, men have short lives, they're quarrelsome, lady, unlucky, misguided, above, always disturbed. So they're saying that they're stating the nature of this age. Kali had already begun. This seemed very inauspicious. So they assembled there in Naimisharanya to perform this 1,000-year yajna. Why? Obviously, for the pleasure of Krishna. This is one of their primary reasons. Prabhupada describes it, I think, in maybe verse 6 in the first verse or something. Obviously for the pleasure of Krishna and for the pleasure of Krishna's devotees. But also, because they are sadhus, they have this intense desire, they have this anxiety to want to do good for the benefit of all. This is the nature of a saintly person. And thinking of this, there's two verses in the Adi Lila, I think it's chapter 9. One starts Bharata Bhumi Haila Manasa Janma Sataki Karikara Paru Upakar. So Gauranga Mahaprabhu is saying that it's actually the duty of everyone who's born in Bharat Bhumi, Bharat Varsh. So some people may say, well, Bharat Varsh just means India, but actually Bharat Varsh means the whole world. It means this whole planet, this whole plane, this plane we're living on. So it's like if you look at it Vedically, it's a flat plane, and this whole area we're living, this dweep, if you like. This is in Jambu Dweep, is part of it's called Bharatvarsh. That's where we're living. So either you can look at it in two ways. You could say, okay, anyone born in India should be giving their life for the benefit of others. Para upakar means upakar means welfare activity, but para upakar means supreme welfare activity. And they should give their life for this purpose. And what is the supreme welfare activity? Is to give Krishna consciousness to others. And then in the very next verse, the Lord is quoting from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. I think it's chapter 22, maybe chapter 35. I can't remember. But anyway, he's quoting this verse wherein he mentions that it's the duty of all to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence and words. So this is actually everybody's duty to do this. Not just, you know, those who are born in India or those who are Vaishnavas or those who know about Krishna, but it's actually the duty of all is to perform welfare activities for others. So if we look at this a little bit, then we think, you know, if everyone was on this level of performing welfare activities for the benefit of others, it'd be a very nice place to live in this world. But, and that also has its complications too, because then maybe no one would want to go back to Godhead because it's so nice here. But, you know, the activities, the welfare activities, as being defined by Gauranga Mahaprabhu, is giving people Krishna consciousness. What we see going on in this world in the present day and age is people are performing activities for the benefit of the self. Their primary interest is how I can increase my material enjoyment. Everywhere. It's no different in any country. Everywhere in the world we see that's what people are doing. Is how can I improve my position materially? How can I get more money? How can I get more sense gratification? How can I increase my sex life? How can I increase my wealth, my opulence, my this, my that? It's all focused around the self. Therefore, because we all have different interests, we're all aspiring to satisfy ourselves. Therefore, my interest is different from your interest because you want to satisfy yourself. It may be the same agenda, but it's a different focus because, you know, you and I are different. Therefore, there's a different focus then. But if the focus, and therefore there's so much competition, there's so much, conflict in the world. I mean, anyone who reads the newspapers is well aware of how much conflict there is in the world. And it seems to be increasing every day. In Libya, in Syria, in this place, in that place. It just goes on and on and on. Riots, wars, deposing leaders, killing each other. I mean, even on the streets of a city like Melbourne, there's so much conflict. You know, people killing each other, murders, rapes, all this type of stuff. Why? This is based on self-interest. Whereas in a society where they're based on, you know, where the interest of the citizens is the benefit of others, these things aren't going to happen. Because they'll understand that everything is actually the property of Krishna. So with this understanding that actually Krishna is the proprietor, as Prabhupada says, that, you know, because there's so much conflict in this world and that everyone's hankering for peace. And Srila Prabhupada would often talk about the League of Nations, the United Nations, how it was a useless endeavor. Because, you know, like after the First World War, they started the League of Nations, failed. After the Second World War, they start the United Nations with this view to end conflict because, you know, people are intelligent enough to realize that war is not a good thing. I mean, like during the Second World War, millions and millions of people were killed and sometimes in very, very horrible circumstances. And so people were intelligent enough to realize we don't want that. And their primary reason for not wanting that is because it interferes with their sense gratification. It's not really that they're so much worried about the suffering of others. They're worried about their own self-interest there. And we see that again, you know, the United Nations, so much endeavor, so many big buildings, like they've got, you know, I've seen this United Nations building in New York, very big building, you know, flags and all, et cetera, et cetera. But for years, they've been going on since about 1946 or 7 or 8 or something like that, the United Nations have been going on. What's the result? Have they finished war's finished? Conflict finished? No, the only thing is more flags. Prabhupada would say, there's just more flags, that's all there is. You see, there's hundreds of flags out there now, and every year, there's new nations. Czechoslovakia split into Czech Republic, Slovak Republic, you know. In Africa, I heard the other day, some of the countries, South Sudan, was succeeding from North Sudan, you know, so another country, more flags. And when you just go, you'll find division is just breaking down into smaller and smaller and smaller, because, you know, this one group of people, they've got their own agenda. They want to live together and try and serve this agenda. Oh, it's different from theirs. Because initially there was one flag, and that was all under one king. But now, as people become more and more focused on their material desires, the flags will increase. So the United Nations is a useless endeavour and hasn't actually achieved anything. Yet we see that the Vedic concept is that the world is focused on benefiting others. And primarily this benefit for others is to give others Krishna consciousness, because this is the only real benefit. Because it's not focused on the body, it's focused on the benefit of the self, of the jiva. What is the true benefit of the jiva? To become God conscious. And that's the point of what the sages of Namasharanya are doing. They're performing this thousand-year yajna to try to push back Kali Yuga. Because they're seeing that Kali Yuga is a very, very difficult time. It's a very difficult time, you know. And we see in the 12th canto, it actually describes some of the things that will happen in Kali Yuga. And when this was being related by Sukadeva Goswami, the sages were struggling to believe this, that, no, this will not happen. They couldn't believe it, that Kali Yuga was going to become so degraded. And we'll see that you know, as Kali Yuga goes on, it will become more. I mean, already we hear some things are very degraded, but, you know, right now some of these things are very, you know, they don't happen so often, but they're going to become more and more commonplace. As we see, you know, the proliferation of television, internet, and all this type of stuff, it becomes very common. You can see so many things, you know. And it's just like, you know, when they start to show, like for a devotee, you know, when we see these things on the media, you know, where they're killing cows, and it's quite shocking to see. But if you see these things often enough, you become desensitized. You know, so children, they're seeing on cartoons. You know, I remember when I was a child, we used to watch Roadrunner and Coyote. You know, and like, it's kind of interesting because all these things, you know, like the coyote would drop an anvil from the top of a cliff, you know, and something would happen, it wouldn't fall straight away, and he'd go down and look up and see what was going on, and the thing would fall on him. And he'd get squashed, but then he'd get back up and keep going. You know, so the children are getting programmed like this. Oh, you can drop these heavy things on people, it's not going to hurt them. But then they do it, and it does hurt them. You know, they're getting, all this conditioning is happening. And then they see, you know, like on the news, they're showing people getting shot, they're showing people getting in horrible car accidents and this thing and that thing, you know. All different types of things. Which initially are quite shocking to see when one first sees these things. But then after some time, you become desensitized, so it's nothing. You know, to kill a person, oh, it happens all the time, so what, you know. So they become desensitized and they just do these things. But they actually, you know, the whole material world is geared to implicating people further and further in this cycle of birth and death. But the spiritualists, they understand how this samsara, how this cycle works. Therefore, they're trying to make arrangements whereby the living entity can actually understand their real nature and come back to Godhead. Therefore, we see the sages, they perform this thousand-year sacrifice. In the beginning of the thousand-year sacrifice, they've installed Suta Goswami on the Vyasa Sun as the most elevated personality. Because why? Because he actually heard the Bhagavatam from Sukadeva. He was present when Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam. And they were thinking this is something of value. Because he knows about Krishna. And there's an interesting verse that's in the Lord Shiva. What is it? Aham vedmi sukho veti va, vyasa veti na veti va. Bhakti bhagavatam gayam. I haven't said this verse a long time, so I don't remember it all. Anyway, so Lord Shiva is saying, he says, I know the Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami knows the Bhagavatam. And Vyasadeva, maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't know. I'm not sure about that. Yeah. And he says, on the whole, the Bhagavatam cannot be understood by you know, the mundane means. It can only be understood by devotion. So Lord Shiva is indicating the importance of the Bhagavatam. And he's indicating the importance of personalities like Sukadeva Goswami, because he spoke the Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami heard him speak the Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami was a living Bhagavatam. He knew the Bhagavatam. He lived the Bhagavatam. So for Sukadeva Goswami to be there and to hear him speaking the Bhagavatam was very significant. The sages understood this significance of this. Therefore, they chose Sukadeva to be their head there, to speak the words of the Bhagavatam, so they could actually understand. Because this is the second time, now we hear this being spoken, this is the second time the Bhagavatam in its entirety has been spoken. For Sukadeva, he's just, you know, because he has this perfect memory, because he's, you know, he's following the process of devotional service perfectly, therefore he's able to relate the entire Bhagavatam without any change, as he heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. So then they start by asking, they ask six different questions in the first canto, first chapter. So he's saying, okay, please explain to us in an easily understandable way what you've ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. So it's absolute, not relative. They're talking about what's the absolute good. What's not, you know, like, okay, get them a new car, or give them a band-aid, put on their sore, or whatever like that. No, they want to know what is the absolute good in all place, all time, for everyone. Yeah? And then we go on to, I think it's text 11. Then he says, it talks about the scriptures. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instructions their hearts may be fully satisfied. Because we see in this world, who's satisfied? Who is satisfied? You know, like people, they're taking intoxication, they want to become, you know, they want to get some pleasure. Okay, fine. Then you ask them, are you satisfied? They say, oh yes, I'm so satisfied. If that's the case, why do you need to keep taking intoxication? Why do you need to keep smoking cigarettes? Because you're not finding satisfaction there. And you're looking for satisfaction. Or drug addicts, you know, they take their drugs. The first time they take drugs, they get quite a strong high from it. And the rest of the time they spend trying to achieve that high. So what do? They take more and more and more and more. And especially with people who are taking, you know, like strong narcotics, they wind up, it eventually gets to the point where they take more narcotics than the body can process, and the body ceases to function because they have an overdose, as they call it. So he's saying, what's the essence of all these scriptures? And he tells them, Krishna Svara Dhammapagati Dhamma Gyani, in the next chapter, he tells them the Bhagavatam, this is the essence of all these scriptures. Because it's even we see, Nirgama Kalpa Taro Garitam Palam Sukha Mukha Maham Pipita Dravya Amitam. That he tells them that the Bhagavatam, like the sages right at the beginning, they're saying that the Bhagavatam is like the ripened tree of the fruit of Vedic knowledge. And actually it's become even more sweet because it was tasted by the lips of Sukadeva Goswami. Because it's come from the lips of Sukadeva Goswami, it's become very sweet. Why? Because he's a greatly realized personality. He's completely free from the bodily concept of life. He's understanding Krishna. Therefore, because he's... It's just like... I'll give you a mundane example. It's like, if you've ever been to Bengal and you hear like a common street person speak Bengal, it sounds quite harsh. Yeah? But when you hear someone like Bhakti Chiru Maharaj or Nittai Chandrabhu speaking Bengali, because they're a little bit more, you know, Bhakti Chiru Maharaj is quite a cultured person, it sounds very musical. It sounds very sweet to hear. So in a similar way with the Bhagavatam, you can have, you know, just an ordinary person recite Bhagavatam. You know, and it doesn't sound so relishable because of their lack of realization. But when someone who has great realization, like Srila Prabhupada, recites the Bhagavatam, explains in his purports, the meaning becomes so lucid that we can actually see into the meaning of these verses. So by hearing from a greatly realized person, then we can also understand the messages of Bhagavatam. And so it's very, very important to hear from the appropriate personality. So they're asking about scriptures. Again, they're focusing on, you know, they're understanding that the Shastra, we need this Shastra because the Shastra is like the favorable winds that direct us on our path back to Godhead. So by hearing the Shastra, we can actually come to understand who we are. We can come to understand the nature of the Supreme. you know, what it is we're supposed to be doing in this world. We can understand about karma, kala, just like the Gita. It has five primary topics. Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, Karma. These five primary topics. So by hearing the Bhagavatam, by hearing the Shastra, but not just hearing the Shastra, because the point is made there, is that you can read the Shastra again and again and again and actually get no realization. But if there's a person involved, if there's a realized person who's presenting the Shastra, because just like, I'll give an example. There's an interesting story. I believe it's in the life of Ramanujacharya. When he was hearing from his, you know, so-called guru, he had a cooler guru, and he was translating a particular verse from the Bhagavatam, which was describing the beautiful features of Krishna's face. And then it got to one particular point, and this person was translating the words A, B, C, D, you know, this means that, this means that, so you're going like syllable by syllable by syllable. And he was saying, therefore, you know, like Krishna has a face like a reddish face like the backside of a monkey. You know, like sometimes you see these monkeys in Vrindavan, when they sit down, they've got these calluses which are very red. So he was describing Krishna's face like that, and Ramanujacharya was crying because he's saying, this is, you know, and then the guru saying, why are you crying? He says, this is not the meaning of this verse. Because this person had no devotion, he couldn't actually see the meaning of the verse. He couldn't actually understand. So, and that's the point that Shiva makes in this verse. He says, on the whole, the Bhagavatam can only be understood by devotion. Doesn't matter how much knowledge or learning we have, we cannot understand, we cannot enter into the mysteries of this topic simply by jnana or logic or reasoning. And Krishna makes the same point in the Gita. He says, Bhakti Mama Bhijanati Yavanya. He says, only by devotion can I be understood as I am standing before you. Even we see in the Mahabharata, when Krishna was present on the planet, he appeared to so many different personalities. So many personalities saw him. Dantavakra and what was the other one? Shishupal. Yeah? So many personalities, Kamsa, etc., you know, Duryodhana. So many personalities had Krishna's direct darshan. They actually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. And they thought he was just an ordinary person. They thought he was, you know, maybe he's a powerful warrior or something like that. You know, as we hear, you know, you read in the stories in the Krishna book how so many people criticized him. They had the direct personal darshan of Krishna. Because they had no bhakti, they could not understand who he was. Only by bhakti can I be seen as I am, standing before you, Krishna says to Arjuna. Only by bhakti. So in the same way, because of Sukadeva's bhakti, he's able to reveal the Bhagavatam to us. Otherwise it just becomes words on the page. And Prabhupada makes the same point in that the first album he recorded, and he gave the purport to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he says, however, the Hare Krishna mantra, the Maha mantra, must be received from the lips of a pure devotee. And he explains that just as milk touched by the lips of a serpent produces poisonous effects, so if one receives the holy name from a non-devotee, it will produce poisonous effects. The person becomes proud, they become puffed up, they think, well, I'm chanting this, I'm chanting that. You know, I'm getting so much benefit. And so in the same way, if one receives knowledge from a non-devotee, the knowledge produces pride. They become puffed up. I have so much knowledge. I'm so learned. And we see there's many examples of this in the life of Gauranga Mahabhu, for instance, when Keshav Kashmiri, he was presenting himself as being very learned, but his knowledge defeated him. Well, there was that pundit who came to defeat Rupa Goswami. And it's a brilliant story because, like, Rupa Goswami completely not interested in defeating this person. He's just interested in studying the Shastra. Because you can see this person had no bhakti. This person was just interested. He said, I want to challenge you to debate. And he said, why do you want to do that? What's your outcome? And what's the outcome you want? He says, I want you to sign a piece of paper saying that, you know, I have defeated you. That was his goal. And he said, give me a paper, I'll sign it. No argument, no nothing. Just give me a paper, I'll sign it. And because he wasn't interested in wasting his time on such a mundane person who was just interested in position, pratishtha. He just wanted to become known as the person who defeated Rupa Goswami, because Rupa Goswami was known as a great scholar. All over the world, Rupa Goswami was known as a great scholar at that time. But then when Jiva heard about this, he didn't like that because he worshipped Rupa and Sanatan. And so Jiva challenged him, and he completely defeated this person, embarrassed them. So, there are people there who are very much proud of their knowledge, and they can read something like Bhagavatam, but it doesn't actually produce a change in the heart unless they hear it from the lips of a pure devotee. There has to be, the bhakti connection has to be there, otherwise it produces no effect. It actually produces a negative effect, and we see that that's so often the case. So then he goes on with his questions. That's 11 and 12, I think. Oh, yeah. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki, the son of Vasudeva. So again, they're focusing on Krishna. Why did Krishna come? Krishna says, Bhaktaraya saranam vinischaya chaduskritam dharma sangstapatataya sambhavami, to deliver the pious and other miscreants, as well as to re-establish principles of religion. And as Prabhupada and our acharyas explained, also to enjoy loving pastimes with his devotees, to enhance the love of his devotees, Krishna appears on this planet. To attract the living entities back to Godhead by his beautiful pastimes. Because, I'm sure many of you have seen this recent production from the devotees in Bangalore, this Little Krishna. There's a cartoon series that they put together. I think there's two or three DVDs, I can't remember. But all these beautiful stories about Krishna, very, very attractive. They're presented in such a way, it's very attractive. So the idea Krishna comes to perform these pastimes to attract the conditioned living entities back to Godhead. And Prabhupada says, especially the childhood pastimes of Krishna are very attractive. You see these wonderful pastimes where Krishna is, in Vrindavan and him and Balaram, they're crawling around on their hands and knees, and they see the tails of the calves dangling in front of them. They grab the tail and they get... The calves get a start, so they run off, and Krishna and Balaram are holding onto the tails, and they're bouncing along in the dust of Braj. And this is so attractive. The residents of Vrindavan, they see this, and they just laugh, and their hearts are melted. And there's so many different other things that Krishna is doing, different pastimes, where people just find so attractive. When he performs pastimes with Kshatriya, persons who have this Kshatriya spirit, they're so attractive when they see Krishna's prowess. When he's performing loving pastimes with devotees, when people have that mood, they're so attracted by these things. So that's the point. He's performing these pastimes to attract the jivas. So, the sages of Navisharanya, they want to bring this out. They want to bring out this mood of why Krishna's doing these things. So that people in general can hear about Krishna's pastimes. That's the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to... That Narad Muni told Vyas is like, you're feeling dissatisfaction. Because again, we're saying, yenatma supersedati, as mentioned in this verse. Yenatma supersedati. This is how you become completely satisfied. And everyone wants to be completely satisfied. Supersedati. Not just prasedati, but supersedati. This amplification. They want to be completely satisfied. Yenatma, the self, becomes completely satisfied by this connection with Krishna. And as it says in the next verse, Sarvai Pungsampara Adamo, Yatta Bhakti Rahakshate Hoituki Apratiha, Yayatma Supersedi. Same thing. Yayatma Supersedi, Yenatma Supersedi. Same thing. This is how the self becomes completely satisfied, is through this process of Dharma, this connected with Krishna. Sarvai Pungsampara Adamo, it says Paroda, this is Sarvai Pungsa for mankind, the best thing for mankind. Parodamo, the supreme Dharma. Is that Dharma which is connected with Krishna, that Dharma which is unmotivated, which completely satisfies the self. That's the best thing to do. Nothing else. Everything else is simply a waste of time. So, and this is the point that they're making here, and that Suta Goswami is going to bring out, and which is exactly the same thing that Sukadeva Goswami brought out when he narrated the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. It's exactly the point he brought out. It's like, this is the essence. And then he brings out very clearly in the third canto and the fifth canto, the story of Ajamil, what the essence of that Dharma is. Which is? What's the essence? Chanting of Hare Krishna. That's the name is the essence. And that's the point that's being brought out. The whole story of Ajamil, what's the point about that story? Is how by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one can become freed from all this binding knot of reactionary work And there's that, there's an interesting verse there, Tasmat Sankatan Vishnu Jangam Mangalamang Hasam Mahatama Pikorivya Vidyai Kantrika Niskritam. How it's, Tasmat, and he says, therefore, you should understand, Tasmat, therefore, Sankatan Vishnu, the chanting of the holy names of Vishnu, Jangam Mangalamang Hasam, is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Nothing else more auspicious than this chanting of Hare Krishna. Mahatam Mapi Kairavya. Mahatam, the greatest of sins. Kairavya, it can free one from the reaction of the greatest of sins. It's making this point of how important the chanting of Hare Krishna is. And then he says, please therefore speak to us who are eager to hear. They're very eager to hear. They've got this great eagerness to hear about the pastimes of Krishna. It's not just like it'd be nice to tell us a few stories, like to hear a bedtime story or something. No, they have this eagerness. They're like on the edge of their seats. What's he going to say next, And when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking the Bhagavatam, the sages were sitting there for 7 days and seven nights, non-stop, he spoke the Bhagavatam. And no one nodded off. In Bhagavatam class, you often see people. And that's only for, half an hour at the most. 7 days, seven nights, Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam. And they, not only were they rapt in attention, they were enlivened, they were ecstatic hearing what was coming from the lips of Sukadeva Goswami. And the same with the sages, they're saying, Suta, Suta, Mahabho, oh great personality, Suta Goswami, please enliven us more and more. They're becoming spiritually enlivened by this process of hearing the Bhagavatam. Therefore, instead of feeling the need for eating and drinking and sleeping, nothing at all. There's no, all their desires are completely placated. Yenatma supersedity. They became completely satisfied. They didn't need anything. Because not only were they spiritually becoming satisfied, as a result of spiritually becoming satisfied, they were materially satisfied. They had no material want. And it's the same for us. If we can come to that point where we're eager to hear the Bhagavatam, we're eager to hear the topics of Krishna, then we'll become completely satisfied in this world. It's the only way to become satisfied. There's no other way of becoming satisfied in this world other than to hear about Krishna. And this point is also made in the second chapter. He says, therefore speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. They're just so eager. They really want to hear this. Please tell us, They're not worried about anything else. They don't want to know about the price of fish in the market or what's going on in the stock market or what the weather's going to be like tomorrow or anything like this. They're only interested to hear about Krishna. Therefore, they're qualified to hear about Krishna. Then the fifth question he asks is, please narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Person of God as multi-incarnations. Such auspicious adventures and pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Controller, are performed by his internal powers. So they also want to know about the internal powers, the Shaktis of Krishna. And the last one he asked, which is the last verse in this chapter, is the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode. Please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter. So they want to know the whole thing about Krishna. They're not interested in any of this material knowledge. They're not interested in, how to fix a car or whatever it is. They just want to know what is the best thing, for the people in general. How can the people in general? This is a very inauspicious way. That's their first statement they make, practically straight out. I think it may be verse 4 or 5 in this section. The first three verses are spoken by Vyasadeva. Where is that verse? Verse 10. They're saying, This age of Kali is so inauspicious, right? And then in the very next verse, after saying how inauspicious this age is, they're asking, okay, this age is inauspicious. What can we do here and now? What can we do to help the people in this age? Because they're suffering, because of this inauspicious age. And that's the position of a devotee. Is a devotee actually interested in what is the best welfare activity I can do for others? Because as Krishna says, and it's one of the final concluding instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, Yadi dam paramam guyam mad bhakti shavidashiti bhakti mai param ritma mamivaisha shisamsaya. What was the next verse? He says, I can't remember. There's two verses there, right at the end of the Gita, where he says, there's no, what is it? Yaridam paramang bhuyam. There's no secret, this is the supreme secret. I can't remember. Yad mad bhakteshwa vidashati. And that, you know, there's no person in this world more dear to me than he who explains this secret to the devotees. And the next verse he says, and nor will there ever be one as dear as this person. So Krishna's saying in the Gita, you know, because like, the tendency is that we focus on what's good for me. We focus on self-improvement. It's quite popular these days, self-improvement, you know, stuff like that. So the tendency is to do that. But then Krishna's saying, and this is very much like the mood of a Vajranandi. A Vajranandi is simply concerned with their own deal, you know, what can I do to improve myself spiritually? Which is glorious, not to be criticized. Better than that, however, is a Goshtinandi, because they're actually interested in the benefit of others. Because it's just like, you know, if you push others up, then you're automatically being, you know, going up yourself. And Krishna makes this point at the end of the Gita, is that that person who is busy in propagating the message that I'm speaking here in the Bhagavad Gita, he's the most dear to me. And Krishna says, and there will never be one as dear to me as that person. So you figure that, it's like, if I'm very dear to Krishna, that obviously means that I've made spiritual advancement. Because not just an ordinary person is going to be dear to Krishna. So by spending out, as it said, the verse I quoted from the Bhagavatam, by our life, our wealth, our intelligence and our words to propagate Krishna consciousness, to give Krishna consciousness to others. In that way we become very dear to Krishna. And automatically we make advancement. We don't need to make any separate endeavor for spiritual advancement. You know, and it says in the fourth chapter, if you just simply try to satisfy the spiritual master, you don't need to make a separate endeavor, because the spiritual master will bless you with realization and advancement. So just by having this, what's that verse? Rupa Goswami quotes, and he says that one has the unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master. The import of all Vedic knowledge is automatically revealed. So Krishna is giving us these instructions at the end of the Gita. His concluding instruction is just to spread this philosophy, and you'll become dear to me. If we have faith in that, then the conclusion of the Shastra, the statement of the Shastra, is that the conclusion of the Shastra will be revealed to you just by having faith in Krishna, just by having faith in the spiritual master. Yasya deva parabhakti, yata deva tathagaru, tashati hi kata prakashanti mahatmana, Krishna is saying. Or Rupa Goswami says. So that's the process, is we just have faith in what Krishna is saying. You know? I mean, sometimes, I think we all struggle sometimes, you know. I sometimes think it's like, well, what if, you know, it gets to the point of death and then that's it, nothing more. And then I think, because Prabhupada said, even if it's not true, it's a nice life. You know? But it is true. The statements of the Shastra are true. They are the fact. And the thing is, the more we study the Shastra, the more we practice or execute the process of devotional service, the more we see how actually these things are happening in this world, how the predictions of Shastra, how the analysis of the Shastra, how it's actually happening. It's true. We can see this all manifesting before us the more we study. So, yeah, we need to have that faith. We have that faith in Krishna's words and the faith in the instruction of the spiritual master. Then actually the import of this knowledge becomes revealed to us, and we'll see things as they actually are in this world. I just might read down what Srila Prabhupada says. Since it has been stated herein before that Bhagavatam, that in the Bhagavatam the absolute truth is to be known, the questions of the sages of Namasharanya are proper and just because they pertain to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Personality of Godhead says that in the Vedas there is nothing but the urge for searching after Him, Lord Krishna. Thus the questions that pertain to Krishna are the sum and substance of all the Vedic inquiries. And it's interesting, Prabhupada's about to talk about, you know, we see in this world people are so busy in different questions. You know, just questioning about this. You know, and it's not just human beings, it's all living entities. Like, you know, often when you come, well, I don't know if you see it here so much, but if, for instance, where the restaurant is in Burley, if you ever get up to the Gold Coast, go to the restaurant in Burley. I mean, the Govinda's restaurant in Burley, it's really first class restaurant, really nice prasadam. But anyhow, just nearby, the beach is there, and there's these hoop pines along the beach, and every night parrots come, they sit there, and they just squawk, 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 for ages, and they're just really, really loud. I mean, you know, if we're sitting next to each other, you couldn't hear each other talk, they're so loud. Yeah? And what are they doing? They're not just, you know, like a materialistic person who has no intelligence, I think they're just making noise, but actually they're talking. Yeah? And Prabhupada says they're asking each other questions. What did you do? Where did you find your food? This thing, that thing. It's all questions and answers. That's what's going on. And that's what all living entities are engaged in, is questions and answers all the time. But they're questions and answers about mundane subject matters. So they bring out karma bandhana. The actions bring bondage. Because they're simply asking about mundane things. But these questions and answers, these are very important, because through these questions are aimed about the supreme welfare for human beings. What is the best thing a person can do? And then in the next answer, in the next verse, he answers that. That the supreme occupation of the dharma is whereby one can understand or can attain to loving devotional service to the absolute truth of the personality of Godhead. Because this is, as Krishna's Kaviraj defines, he says, Jiveda Surupahoi Krishna Nityadas. This is the true dharma of the jiva, is to serve Krishna. Nothing else. Anything else is just illusion. So by engaging this dharma, this occupational duty of serving Krishna, this is where the living entity becomes reconnected with their actual position. There you become happy. Because we find, like, you know, Prabhupada tells that story about the fish. You know, who gets caught by the fisherman, he's out of water, and, you know, because he's a talking fish, so the fisherman's really happy about that, and he thinks he can make big money. But he wants to keep the fish satisfied, so he's asking the fish, you know, he gives the fish all these different material opulences that are aspired for in this world. He gives him a nice place to sit by the swimming pool, he gives him cigars, you know, big fat Havana cigars, he gives him pina colada to drink, and all these different types of things, all these, you know, sought after things. But the fish is never happy, because he's out of his environment. So the same with the jiva in this material world. The jiva is never going to be happy. It doesn't matter what they get, what they achieve. They're never going to be happy because they're out of their natural environment. So, you know, there's no amount of material adjustments to be made that will actually satisfy the living entity. You know, and we see in this world that the living entities simply busy themselves with material solutions to material problems. But all that brings about, as we're saying about the United Nations, all it brings about is more problems. You know, and a classic example of that is the motor car. The motor car was a material solution to a material problem. People wanted to go from one place to another faster. That was their problem. It took them too long to get places, so they made a motor car. And just look at the problems that have come from the motor car. Look at what we're facing in the world right now. Global warming. I mean, from what I understand, one of the biggest percentages of pollution in this world is coming from automobiles and things like that. You know, ships at sea, all those things with engines. Huge amount of pollution is coming from those things. Yeah. And that's one aspect. How many people are killed on the roads every year? In India, it's 100,000 people a year are killed in automotive accidents. Yeah. 100,000 people a year. In Australia, it's about 5,000. Of course, they have a much bigger population there than we do. But, you know, it's, you know, a huge amount of people are killed. And like, you know, the work that people have to do to maintain the cars, the factories, you know, horrible ugra karma that goes into making, you know, engines and cars and this thing and that thing. It's a horrible thing. And they're just pushing it again and again. So we see, they had a problem, they came up with a solution. And what came? So many more problems. And interestingly enough, I quoted this statistic before. Yeah, because they're thinking they're going to get from one place to another quicker. In London, I'm sure this statistic's quite similar here. In London, in the days of horse and cart, the average speed of traffic was 12 kilometres an hour. Now, in the day when you have cars that can do 300 plus kilometres an hour, the average speed of traffic in London is 12 kilometres an hour. So all this endeavor, they didn't solve their problem. And they just created so many more problems. And that's the reality of the material world. You may endeavor to try to solve your problem, but all you do is create more problems, and you will not solve the problem. You know? It's like the scientists, they come up with so many so-called cures for diseases and stuff like that, but everyone still dies. You know, like one time they were saying to Prabhupada, these reporters, they're saying, "Oh, Swamiji, why is the death rate so high in India?" He said, "No, the death rate is the same everywhere, 100%. Everyone dies, it's a fact, you know, and they can't do anything about it. Yeah? So, you know, so much endeavor is being made to solve these problems, but until they actually identify, you need a spiritual solution. You need to understand the actual nature of the problem. What's the nature of the problem? I think I'm the body. As long as we have that problem, as long as we think we're the body, you're not going to solve any problems. So all these endeavors are just simply based on the body. Yeah? And as long as we do that, the problem still remains. Because they don't. The problem is, they don't understand what the problem is. They're thinking it's this, it's that, it's the other thing. You know, like, they're suffering, it's too hot, they turn on the fan. Then it's too cold, they get a cold. You know, it's like you sleep under the fan at night, you get a cold, you've got another problem. So do something else, and it creates another problem. You do something else, it creates another problem. Yeah. But they need to understand, it's like, you know, I'm not the body. That's the problem, is this false identification. The whole world is full of questions and answers. The birds, beasts, and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers. And in the evening, also, the same birds come back and again become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers. And so also the lawyer in the court and the students in the schools and colleges, the legislators in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers. And the politicians and press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. It's a simple thing to understand. Why? You know, they're busying themselves with material questions and answers, which are only related to the body. They're not the body. Therefore, they'll never be satisfied. As long as we focus our endeavors on the body, we'll never be satisfied because we're not the body. As long as you spend your life polishing your car, you're never going to be satisfied because you're not the car. You know, or Prabhupada, he told, Satsarupa Maharaj originally told the story, and then Prabhupada repeated the story of the bird in the golden cage. You know, how the person was just tending to the cage. It was a very beautiful cage, solid gold. Be worth a fortune. You know? And so they're busying themselves keeping the cage clean and polishing the cage and all that. Oh, look at the beautiful cage, you know, stuff like that. But in the meanwhile, then they neglected the bird within the cage and the bird died because it was neglected. So Prabhupada used this as an analogy to demonstrate how people are busying themselves simply with the external ephemeral body and not busying themselves with the jiva. And we see how the nature of the jiva is becoming more and more and more suppressed. How people are becoming more and more frustrated. Why is the crime rate going up? Because people are more frustrated. Why is there so much dissatisfaction? You know, why are all these things happening? Because people are not satisfied. Why are they not satisfied? Because they don't understand the nature of the self. Because they don't understand who they are. Only when they understand that actually, I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm a spirit soul. And the way to become satisfied is by serving Krishna, will actually achieve satisfaction. Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, and object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. All things but Krishna give temporary satisfaction only. So, if we are to have complete satisfaction, we must take the questions and answers about Krishna. That's why the Bhagavatam is so glorious, is because it deals with Krishna only. We cannot live for a moment without being questioned or without giving answers. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with questions and answers that are related to Krishna, we can derive the highest satisfaction only by reading and hearing this transcendental literature. One should learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are the sum total of all things. So, very nice statements from Prabhupada. Sum total of all things. Everything you need to know is contained within the Bhagavatam to achieve satisfaction. You may say, oh, but I won't learn how to fix my car. You're not going to get satisfaction. You're not going to get permanent satisfaction. You get a temporary satisfaction, you know, until the next time it breaks. Isn't it? You fix it, it breaks. You fix it, it breaks. That's what it's like. That's material life. You fix it, it breaks. Only lasts a little while. Some things last longer than others, but you fix it, it breaks. That's material life. But only in spiritual life, you know, only by pursuing the topics related to Krishna will you get satisfaction. And this is going to be discussed more and more in this chapter. It's very, very nice. Talks about how to gain this taste for serving Krishna, for hearing about Krishna, etc. Alright, any questions at all? Thank you very much. Grantrachma Bhagavatamaki, Samaveta Bhaktivinity, Sri Prabhupada Ki, Jainitai Go Premanandi. Thank you.